Now we bring on John Winters, retired park superintendent.
I'm a park ranger and I dig danger, dream of it night and day. And God willing, I beat up killing.
That's right. Wow. I can't say, and we don't have time for John today, so unfortunately, yeah. we'll see him next week. Like, what do I do now?
Let's get a good guest on here.
Boy, she was fascinating. She that's intriguing.
She's sharp.
The fact that she's so articulate.
Yeah, and there's more to this story. Apparently, this young lady has gone with her mother and photographed the shoreline, trying to get a sense of, okay, what are all these various disturbances and what are these kind of, I'll call them hotspots. You know, you got these various drainage areas, which are, you know, they carry a lot of pollution into the lake. So she's photographed this to get her head around the whole idea of, you know, what really is the overall health. But that lake has been kicking out a lot of fish for a long period of time. It's a factory. Not to say that it's all good. It's not all good, but a lot of effort's been put into protecting it.
Great body of water. I fished it as a kid, and I'm sure many of our listeners did. And it just keeps producing, just keeps churning. Even with all the traffic and the population that surrounds that lake, you would think that on its own would be enough to decimate the marine life, but it just flourishes.
You know, superb lake trout fishery.
Oh, unreal.
And it had a time when whitefish almost disappeared right off the map, and they're back. And one of the really interesting things in all of this, and I haven't seen any science reports on it, has to do with round goby, whether they were a real scourge, as everyone thought they would be, because we've got bigger, more robust bass, lake trout, which are far bigger than when I fished it. So it...
Everything there. Whitefish has probably the best whitefish fishing anywhere to be had, and underutilized, tremendously underutilized, but everything in that body of water is fantastic.
Exactly.
And it's nice, and the other part about is it's so close to, 6 million people?
Right.
It's an hour's drive or less for most of them to get to Lake Simcoe, and it still produces. Anyways, talk to me about, there's been a couple of weeks now that we've not been able to talk about this because I've never have enough time for you.
Well, I wanted to speak about some work that's been done on woodland caribou.
Yes.
And woodland caribou are found in northern Ontario, not in great numbers, but greater numbers in northern British Columbia, northern Alberta. And they aren't really doing very well. And part of the reason is that they really like this thick boreal undisturbed forest cover. And a problem that you get into is as soon as you start punching in roads and you start into resource development stuff, it interrupts this habitat. But I think what has surprised people is it's become the corridor that allows the moose, the deer, and the wolves to come in. And the wolves will follow moose and deer. So as they cut these lines, whether it's roads or it's a pipeline corridor or it's a survey corridor for gas, oil exploration, they cut it open. The habitat improves for browse. The moose and deer come in, which everyone would think, well, this is great. In come the wolves. And the wolves heavily exploit the caribou. The caribou do not do one well under these circumstances. So the response has been, why don't we try to do restoration? So they put a lot of money into down woody debris, like create a jungle with dropping trees over it, replant trees and all of this, and then put in game cameras. And the game cameras were put in to monitor to see just how successful all of this is.
Where was this?
This was in northern Alberta and northern British Columbia.
Okay.
Right. So the game cameras went in, and they got a lot of images. They got images of bears, of wolves, deer, moose, but they didn't do so well on caribou, and the caribou numbers continued to decline. So one of the things that I think we need to think about when we get into this human management of wildlife, and we think that we can manage wildlife, we better learn how to manage our own activities, better manage what we do on the land, because in this particular case, it's not working. So all this effort that's been put in is not working for woodland caribou.
But it's working for the other mammals?
It's doing well for them. Right, and right. one of the questions long-term is going to be, are we going to be able to conserve woodland caribou in northern Canada? Are they going to be one of the species that suffers a significant disadvantage due to human change, climate change, and so many other factors? Are we going to, over time, just see smaller and smaller numbers as they dwindle and other species occupy their territories?
You know, it would be very easy to pile on at this point and agree with you and say, I understand what you're saying. But truth of the matter is that in this particular case, you've got three or four species that are doing well.
Right.
Right. And actually one species that does extremely well when we cut new hydro lines and whatnot through the woods, and that is the moose.
Exactly.
Right. But we have one that's not. So we have three or four that are flourishing and doing well, and one that's not. And my comment, as difficult as this is for me to make, is sometimes you got to cut your losses and say, hey, I got to go for the greater good of the mass. And in this case, if it's working for all those other animals and it's not working for caribou, yeah.
So you'd make the choice.
I would have to make that choice, yes. Because, you know, I mean, our whole, if historically speaking, we lose and gain constantly, have been for thousands of years. Species have gone extinct under our watch, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to...
Well, there is
sound callous to it, but it's the reality, and it's the reality of life.
There is one other option, and that option is that we set aside large areas in northern Canada, and we say those will remain natural, and we commit to that. Mm. And that is the thinking of some of the leading conservation scientists around the world. There will have to be areas set aside, country by country, species by species, in order to maintain and conserve species diversity around the world. And if we don't wish to do that, then we're going to be the great manipulators.
Which we already are.
True.
And have been for some time.
That's
we
true.
Already are. I would love to keep everything pristine. I went to Northern Ontario and helped a group of people to, in fact, we sat with the Minister Jakubowski back in May of this year for that very reason, because they were starting to talk about loosening up some of Northern Ontario to the lumber industry, open up some of those wild areas so that they could go in and do some cutting. And, of course, a lot of the concerned people that live in that area and run businesses in that area, like the folks at Lodge 88 and Betty McGee from Pine Portage, they're up in arms over it. And it is very concerning as we open up more of those areas, for sure.
Well, it's been the item of discussion since my first day starting with OM and RNF. I mean,
yeah,
the reality has been, do you cut this area or not?
Yeah. Well, anyways, we could talk about that the whole show. We should do a 2-hour show about it.
Well, I'll get you the experts.
Perfect.
People that know a lot more than we do.
That wouldn't take much. More journal after this, so it's Dare Go Away.